Gentlemen, welcome to Electric Leftovers. My name is Jason. This is episode 375. I tell you, I was going through some nonsense last time. I think I did. Nonsense is not cleared up at the time I'm recording this. Still a thing. So, still working on it. If I don't have my chipper demeanor and attitude for this week's episode, it's because I'm just sick of it. You know what I mean? I am sick of it. Anyway, we'll get through the show all the same. This week we're going to look at Decap Attack for the Genesis. We're not going to read some reviews for Death's Door because there aren't any. None of our usual contributions anyway. And we're going to go back to Oddity Central for some more news. Do I have any good news for you? Well, there's some more Final Fantasy VII happening. There's some more of that Zelda 2 thing I'm doing where I'm comparing and contrasting my playthrough with Darkside Phil's. New soundtrack up at the soundtrack channel was Arkista's Ring. New podcast coming up on the podcast stuff. And we are continuing onward with our medieval stream. How about that? That's a good overall, just quick, is what's happening. I'm not excited to look at this week's game. I don't like this week's game. But, you know, we gotta do what we gotta do. I apologize in advance for the music. Head and hurl your head. It's okay, you've got another one. Use it to squelch pop-eyed super slugs and lots of other ghouls, goblins, and creepy creations. You're Chuck D. Head, and you're beheaded for a bone-chilling adventure. Boing off a pole. That's a sentence. Leap across collapsing log bridges. Bop atop a roving eyeball. Then punch a skull head for extra propulsion. or start a psychedelic earthquake in Dr. Frank N. Stein's lab. Ghastly creatures prowl islands, body parts. That's also a sentence. Totem poles bury you alive. Horned beasts lash their tongues. Finally, meet Max Decap. And remember, if he spooks you, it's all in your head. 1991 was a dark time for Back of Boxes. This is indeed Decap Attack, starring Chuck D. Head, an action game for the Genesis developed by Vic Tokai, published by Sega, released in the space year 1991. This is a game that a friend of mine was playing. Oh no, a friend of mine wanted to play, asked me to do a Let's Play of, so I did it. It's not very good. Don't care for this game much. graphics are fine, but gameplay-wise, not very good. The music is bad. Lots of things bad. This was actually a westernized version of a Mega Drive game from Japan called Magical Hat no Butobi Taibo Daiboken. And I got that wrong on so many levels, I'm sure. From the look of it, we did get a easier version of this. The original is based on a series. The series stars a character named Hat, who's the descendant of a hero who fought an evil king and sealed devildom. He falls in and has to defeat the king to get out. And then Decap Attack turns us into a mummy that throws a head. For reasons unknown. Anyway, it's relatively short, I can tell you that, but I wouldn't go as far as to say it's fun. You have been warned. The music in Death's Door really just hits me, man. I loved the game so much that I started listening to the soundtrack, and I was watching some stuff about the game on YouTube, and that got me into like a deep dive. You know, the I think there's a channel called NoClip, it's called, and it does like crowdsourced documentaries, and they had one on this game, so I watched it. There was something else that I watched, and you know, just all of this different stuff I started watching, and I learned a lot about Death's Door. One of the things I learned about Death's Door is that it's actually a sequel to a game called Titan Souls, which is a game I have played terribly, terribly little of because I didn't like the gameplay. But the whole, like, end of Death's Door ties precisely into the end of Titan Souls. And in fact, according to the developers, there are areas in Death's Door that are directly pulled from Titan Souls. It all happens in the same world, the same universe, and there's even overlapping characters. So I'm like, oh my god, what did I sleep on? So I went and started playing some Titan Souls. Still don't love the gameplay. I think it's a neat idea. I'm not very good at it, is the problem. I'm getting all this just because we have no reviews, no GameFAQs reviews this week. So I want to talk about it a little bit. So basically, you go through all of Titan Souls, and what happens to your main character at the end of Titan Souls sets up the events for what goes wrong in Death's Door, but it's possibly going wrong on purpose so we, the crow in Death's Door, can fix it and make things better at the end. It's one of those weird, like, Dr. Manhattan kind of things. It's very big and very involved, and I like it very much. And I have more respect for Titan Souls now because of that, so I will continue to play that and die horribly at it. Because in Titan Souls, if you don't know, you can kill any boss in one hit. Any boss can kill you in one hit. You have one arrow. You shoot. If you miss, you have to go pick it up. It ain't easy. It's kind of fun, but it's also kind of frustrating. Anyway, Death's Door. So I'm just going to pull up here, and I'm going to go to the store page on Steam. I could read Steam reviews. I don't want to. The way Death's Door works is... Lords of Doors were created because the world was going nuts. These Lords of Doors were created to kind of give the world order. But then one of them went kind of crazy and he didn't want to die. So he decided, I just won't. It's kind of his thing. He set this whole plan in motion to where death would basically cease to exist. But the only way to make death cease to exist was not just, you know, you can't become immortal, right? That's not how it works in this universe. So they find a way, this Lord of Doors, to basically make everybody live for a lot longer than they're supposed to. Nobody's immortal. You can be killed, but your soul can't go anywhere. The problem is, the longer you're alive, the more... I think the game says you're going demonic, right? Basically, the longer you're alive, the worse off you are. You know, you're falling apart. Things are happening that aren't good. There's a character in a movie. I think, like, death becomes her. Except you also go crazy. Like, your arm falls off, you go nuts. You become feral, almost. And that's what's going on with the goal of setting, achieving, and maintaining order in the world. These Lords of Doors have banished death, which worked out really well for a really long time. But now everything's fallen apart because nothing can die, and it's getting worse. Our job as a crow is to harvest souls. And these souls are supposed to go back into, like, the ether kind of thing, and then reconstitute and it becomes like this whole Final Fantasy thing where all the souls go into the thing and then they come out as new souls, right? That's our job. So we get sent off through the bureaucratic system that these Lords of Doors have set up to go and reap a soul. Except this other crow shows up, takes it, because the soul he's been looking for is stuck behind a door and he can't get to it. So he's taking the souls from the like Titan souls, almost, I guess is the best way to say it, that we have to deal with. He is taking them and he's trying to use them to break down this door so he can get to the soul he's been hunting. There's your setup. So we go through, there's like hub world, there's our office, and then from the office we go to the hub, and from the hub we go to three different worlds, and each of these different worlds has its own look and sound and character and feel, and it's both segregated but intertwined, I guess is the way to say it, because the way the world is laid out, and listening to the developers talk about it in these little documentaries I watched, like everything is attached to everything else. It's not like Hexen or Heretic where you've got your hub world and that just takes you to a whole other place that's not connected in any way to the rest of the world. There's mountains and there's towers, and these towers are on top of the mountains, which are on top of a thing that's right behind the first dungeon kind of area, and in between them is the third dungeon area, and then the second dungeon area is all flooded because the water from the mountains, you know, it's a big huge interconnected world, but each area feels unique to itself. Another way I could say it is, you think like Diablo 2, every chapter in Diablo 2 is very different. Chapter 1 is very different from the desert, which is very different from the swamp, which is very different from hell, which is very different from the mountains. But you never see in Diablo 2 the connection, you know what I mean? There's always a cutscene to transition you from the rogue's encampment to the desert to the swamp, you know. Similar, but it makes more sense spatially in Death's Door. Graphically, I think the game is very, very good. The character design is excellent. That was something talked about in the documentary. I would really suggest you go and look at it if this game interests you. Where the first game they did, Titan Souls, the first game, I say game, because they made Flash games and stuff like that. But was a very basic pixel art kind of thing. They went and found some artists and had concept art done, and that really set the feel of the game from there. They had an idea of what the gameplay was going to be, what the story was going to be a little bit, but then, boom. Took the character design and that built more on the world. And in fact, one of the bosses in the game was not going to be, it was never designed to be a boss in the game. I mean, like, there's a boss that only exists in the game because the developers liked the sketch so much, they put him in the game. And I think that's awesome. They did not tweak a lot of it. It was very, oh, this looks great, let's leave it just like that. Don't mess with it, it's fine. And I appreciate that. I think the areas look great. I think the character design is great. Enemies are great. Everything. Graphically, this game is great. I love it. Love everything about it. Musically, one of my favorite gaming soundtracks of the last long time. Long time. It's a soundtrack I can put on and just listen to all the way through and not realize that I've listened to the whole thing, because it's very good. It does the thing that a lot of really good soundtracks do, where there's a central theme that gets utilized throughout the other themes of the game. Sometimes it's very obvious, sometimes it's a stylistic shift, sometimes it's very hidden and just kind of peppered in here and there, and I think that's wonderful. I really appreciate that, because it gives a sense of continuity to the areas in the game where they all share that little piece of the same music, which makes the universe feel more complete to me, and I really like that. Gameplay wise, very hack and slash, Diablo 2 ish, very Zelda y as well, I would say, thinking back on it a bit. Because you have things like a bow and arrow and a hookshot, you have magic, but it's a little more frantic than a Zelda game, you know? It's, I probably compared it to Dark Souls because you have a dodge and you die and you respawn at checkpoints. You don't lose anything when you die except progress, and checkpoints are so abundant in Death's Door that it was really not an accurate comparison for me to make at the time. It does feel much more like a Diablo or a Zelda or a Bastion kind of a game. Just based on, you know, enemies are going to come at you. You hit them, you get out of the way. The combat feels very good. It's very fluid, very smooth. You have an abundance of weapons, from your basic little sword to prop weapons like an umbrella. You've got a fast but weak pair of daggers. You've got a slow but very strong hammer. Fire spells, bow and arrow I mentioned. There's a hookshot in the game I mentioned. Your arsenal is not huge like a Zelda arsenal is, but it's big enough that you can get through any situation, and there are no situations in which you kind of feel like, oh, if only I had this, this would be better. You know what I mean? Works very well. The story, I really loved the story and the characters that appear in the game universe when I first played the game. Now that I know it's got this other connection to this other game and I'm playing it, I'm going to finish Titan Souls and I'm going to replay Death's Door on my own. And I feel like I'm going to enjoy both more now that I understand that connection, or will understand that connection a little bit better. So, graphics, music, gameplay, story. I hesitate to give anything a perfect 10 because I think that's a very lofty ambition to reach. And a lot of companies who have reviewed the game have given it, you know, 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 5 out of 5 kind of a thing. But I think this is a 10. I think Death's Door is a 10 for me. I don't think there's anything about it that I really disliked. Actually, no, wait. There is one thing that I wish would have been done a little different. I know why they did it. I understand it, but I think they could have tweaked it a little bit. There are two endings of the game. Regular, go through, kill all the bosses, end of the game. And then there's, you have to collect and plant all these seeds. And these seeds get you to a point where you can open up the secret ending, which you've got to do like 5 other things for. And getting to this hidden secret bonus true ending is really the thing that ties both of the games together. So I understand that it's very, very well hidden. But as I was playing the game and starting to see like, oh, I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, and I've got to do this, all this kind of stuff, it felt too much of a chore because there is so much of it to do. We went ahead and did it in the stream, but I wasn't excited or interested in doing it at the time just because there are so many things you have to do. Both in terms of quantity of tasks and length of tasks. There's a lot. And I think that could have been trimmed down just a little bit for the more casual of gamers. Maybe have a third level of ending. Like, you beat the final boss. Good job. Game over. You found some of the secrets. So here's a teaser to make you want to go and find the rest of the secrets kind of a thing. I don't know. That'd be my only hit, and I'm only going to drop it half a point for that. So I'm going to give this a 9.5 out of 10, and I'm giving us a 9.5 out of 10 because that is not a requirement for the game. It is It's only if you are the completionist type. Okay? I think that should work. Yeah. I think that's totally fine. Back at Oddity Central. I'm going to pull up a couple of things here. Don't care about that. That's last week's. Okay. I've got three stories we're going to read this week. There's a potential for a fourth. We'll see how long it takes us to get through this. So let's just start. Company reinvents basketball with airless see-through prototype. Sports equipment giant Wilson recently unveiled a 3D printed basketball prototype that does not need to be inflated and features a see-through lattice design. Think a wiffle ball. Basketball technology has come a long way since the early days of the sport where real stitched leather was used as the main material, but Wilson is trying to change the game completely with an intriguing concept that completely does away, please say completely one more time in the same sentence, completely does away with pneumatic pressure. Instead, the Wilson Airless Prototype, or the WAP, relies on the elasticity of its quote, research-grade polymer material to produce the same bounce as traditional basketballs. This eliminates the need to inflate the ball to a certain pressure, as well as known problems like puncture risks and air escaping through the inflation valve over long periods of time. One of the most intriguing features of the airless basketball is the lattice design. Although Wilson has kept the traditional binding pattern of the regular basketball, ensuring that players can still get their fingers into the seam lines for better grip, the prototype has a very futuristic look. Because containing air pressure inside is no longer a requirement, the ball itself is see-through, with hundreds of hexagonal holes allowing air to pass through. Working with manufacturing company EOS, Wilson reportedly 3D printed its airless prototype using the selective laser sintering, the SLS method, of additive manufacturing to fuse several layers of polymer powder. The main concern was replicating the bounce of a traditional basketball, which was no small feat, considering there was no internal air pressure to generate rebound. The WAP was unveiled last month during the NBA All-Star Weekend with Houston Rockets forward KJ Martin. He was filmed bouncing it around a bit and throwing it at the basket. Not shooting it, throwing it at the basket. The heavily edited video makes it look like a perfectly good alternative to the regular basketball, but the company acknowledges that it is still a prototype that requires more testing. There are indeed a few unanswered questions about this intriguing invention. For example, we don't really know what the grip is like, both because of the new polymer-based material and its lattice design, how the air passing through it affects the trajectory, or if it's better than a regular ball on a windy day, or how it reacts to spin. One thing those hexagonal holes won't allow you to do is spin the basketball on your fingertips. And speaking of those holes, what if something like a pebble gets inside the ball? Does it just bounce around as you play? Well, I guess we'll have to wait until Wilson finally launches the airless basketball commercially, if it ever decides to do so. Oh, Wilson. Our next story, the non-existent country that snuck into two United Nations meetings this year. The United States of Kailasa, a non-existent country created by a controversial Indian guru, somehow managed to sneak into two UN meetings this year. Founded by Indian fugitive and self-proclaimed godman, oh boy, Nithyananda Paramashivma. We're going to call him Nitty. The United States of Kailasa claims to be the first sovereign state for Hindus. However, you'll have a tough time trying to locate it on any map. Not because of its size, but because no one knows where it actually is. In 2019, when Nitty announced the formation of Kailasa as a state, he claimed to have bought an island off the coast of Ecuador as its headquarters. But the government of the South American country denied any knowledge of the transaction. The controversial guru hasn't made any public appearances in the last 4 years, but the fictional nation's ambition has grown, and this year its representatives have attended two UN meetings. They even have a QR code. It's right there. I'm looking at it. I'm not going to scan it. Nitty, known as the Supreme Pontiff of Hinduism by his followers, has a rather complicated past. A female disciple had accused him of rape in 2010, but he was only briefly arrested and then released on bail. He was later accused of kidnapping and confining children at his ashram in Gujarat, India, but days before he was due to show up in court, he disappeared and has been on the run ever since. Even though the so-called God-man hasn't made any public appearances in recent years, videos of his sermons are regularly released on his many social media channels, and his followers have been pushing the idea of Kailasa as a state of, quote, 2 billion Hindus really hard. It's claimed that the United States of Kailasa is a country for Hindus who are the victims of persecution, just like its founder. Nitty and his followers claim to be the victims of persecution for over a decade, including over 70 assassination attempts, over 250 sexual assaults, lawfare of 120 false cases, massive hate propaganda in electronic media, and over 17,000 hours in print media of over 25,000 articles. They consider any attempt to bring their leader to justice as an attack on Hinduism itself. Although the United States of Kailasa, named after a mountain in the Himalayas that is considered the home of the Hindu god Shiva, has been around for a few years, it only started getting international attention in 2023 after its representatives were spotted at a couple of UN meetings. A woman who introduced herself as... oh, I am so bad with these names. Vijayapraya Nithyananda, the permanent ambassador to the United States of Kailasa, even took the microphone and asked about indigenous rights and substantial development. A UN official later said that their submissions were irrelevant and tangential to the issues being discussed at the meetings in Geneva. Wow, they've even got, like, fake... Here's a fake sign. The United States of America recognizes the United States of Kailasa and signs bilateral agreement, January 11th, 2023. Oh boy. Describing it as the first sovereign state for Hindus, Vajpayee claimed that the country had provided necessities such as food, shelter, and medical care for free to all its citizens, although those claims are basically impossible to clarify. As to how the representatives of the non-existent country gained entry to the meetings, a UN rep said that the events were public, so virtually anyone could attend. Still, being associated with a fictional nation founded by a controversial figure was not a good look for the UN. In January of this year, the United States of Kailasa announced that it had been officially recognized by America, citing a sister city agreement with the U.S. city of Newark as proof. The agreement was recently rescinded by the U.S. authorities, suggesting that Newark officials had been deceived by the fictional nation's representatives. So they actually just did it. They just did it. Okay. It looks real fake. It looks like something I would have thrown together. You know what I mean? Okay. And our final story. Man finds son playing video games at 11 a.m. Makes him play continuously for 17 hours. This is like catching your kid smoking kind of thing. Longtime followers of your old pal Jason here will remember when I said, I'm going to play Earthbound. Stream it 100% all the way through. I think I made it 20 hours before I had to stop. We were almost halfway, a little more than halfway. I think we'd gotten to Stonehenge. Anyway, a father who caught his young son playing video games on his phone at 11 a.m. on a school night punished him by making his play on his phone until he could play no more. Too much of a good thing becomes harmful or bothersome over a large period of time, and one Chinese boy from Shenzhen found this out the hard way a couple days ago when his father caught him playing video games on his phone after midnight, despite knowing he had to get up for school the next morning. The parent told the Metropolis Times that he was furious when he found his son playing with his phone when he should have been sound asleep, but he didn't know how to react at first. He wanted to teach the boy a lesson he wouldn't easily forget, so instead of scolding the boy, he just told him he could play his phone instead of sleeping, adding that he could even take the day off from school so he could play some more. The young boy reportedly enjoyed his unusual punishment quite a bit at first, continuing to play on his phone until under his father's supervision all throughout the night until about 7 a.m. That's when the drowsiness started setting in, but when the kid tried putting the phone down and going to bed, his father let him know that he had also taken a day off from work to make sure his son gets in as much video game time as possible with no sleep. The dad said that the boy fell asleep with the phone in his hands multiple times, and he had to shake him back to consciousness despite his protests. At around 6:30 in the evening, after around 17 hours of gaming, the boy pleaded with his father to let him sleep, promising that he would never again play on his phone behind his parents' back. He even agreed to put his promise in writing to make it official. Something happens here at Oddity Central, I've noticed. They use the same word multiple times in the same sentence. So here's the sentence. At around 6:30 in the evening, after around 17 hours of gaming. And we had it in the other story. The video posted by the dad on Weibo on March 8th sparked a heated debate around several issues like video game addiction in young kids and the way it was handled in this particular case. Some applauded the father for thinking outside the box and making the boy sick of his favorite pastime, while others criticized him for forcing him to stay awake for so long at an age when his brain is still developing. For his part, the man clarified that he doesn't recommend anyone else try this method with their kids. Interestingly, the method of punishing kids by making do things they love until they become unbearable is apparently becoming popular in China. Late last year, we wrote about a couple who made their child watch TV until he could no longer stay awake after catching him doing it instead of sleeping. I don't know, I'd do it. I would totally do it. Oh, you want to be a gamer, huh? Well, let's go. I'm gonna get out the Game Boy. We're just gonna sit here. We're gonna play games. You and me, kid. 18 hours. Watch out. Ladies and gentlemen, that is it for this week's edition of Electric Leftovers, the podcast, the movie, the game. Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please do consider giving us a like, a review, and a subscribe, and all that nonsense. So much nonsense. What else can I tell you? Oh, if you'd like to check out the videos for Death's Door, Decap Tech, and all the things we talked about here on the show, you can head over to Jason's Groove Machine on YouTube or jasonsgroovemachine.com and get all of that stuff. New episodes of the show come out every Thursday on the podcast software of your choice. And we are still ever onward getting all the old stuff added to the Electric Leftovers podcast channel on YouTube. If you want to check out soundtracks for the games that we have heard on, you can get some of those over at Groove Machine Soundtracks on YouTube. And anything else? If you'd like to support the show, you can visit buymeacoffee.com/electricleft and buy me a coffee. And I will make some delicious cold brew coffee. And I will show you the process someday. Because it's time consuming, but it's easy. It's a little messy. Not bad. I don't have the tools to do it. I don't have the special little thing. So it's a series of jars. Smallening jars. Something like that. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. And it'd be just like founding our own sovereign nation if you'd agree to join with me next time. Thank you very much.